Hey, this is Omar with Matt from Single Bullet Theory. So, Matt, this is your first record since On Broken Wings. What made you guys stop?
Oh, well, in 08, I'd gone through a divorce. I was beginning to go through a divorce in the beginning of 08. And I had decided, basically, that, the band hadn't been real successful. We'd done some decent tours and stuff, but it was something where I was putting too much time and effort into, and it was affecting my marriage, it was affecting my business. So I kind of decided, just to give it a rest for a while. On Broken Wings was one of my favorite records we've done, but it was a dark record for me. And when it was done and it was, complete, I decided I really didn't want to do this anymore for a while. And then after you stop, you realize that this is what I'm, this is what I do. So, we had to reassemble and get back into this as soon as we could, and it took a longer time than we planned. I'd only stopped for about 7 or 8 months. It seemed like 3 years, but it took about 2 years to get the four record, our newest record, together. It was, it wasn't like it's not like just riding a bike. You got to go out and get new members and then start writing new songs and then decide if you're going to do exactly the same sound as you had before, which we always have a similar sound because I write similar shit all the time. But I wanted to go a little different of a tone for the four record, and, it was a... It was a long 7 months sitting around going, man, I used to be this, I used to do that, I didn't want to be the I used to guy anymore, Talking to my buddies who were touring still and stuff, and I'm like telling them, oh yeah, when we toured with King Diamond, and when we did this, and they're like, you're still currently doing shit, so what I say is irrelevant, So that's kind of why it took so long.
So you're the only carryover member from the last record.
Yeah.
Was any interest in any of them coming back into the new record, or we just said, I'm going to start fresh with a whole new lineup?
No, well, they're, I'm the only member that's ever been in the original member at all, and it's always been my band, it's always been my baby. I'm like the Dave Mustaine of this band. And what happened was when we broke up, it was a pretty bad breakup, and my business partner at the time was my bass player. He's like was one of my best friends, and when he had decided that he didn't want to be part of it, it made it really easy for me to not want to go on, because I'm like, well, I'm not going to do it without Billy. Well, when I decided to put this new group together, the first thing I did was get a bass player. And I decided, get a bass player as soon as possible. That way his position was filled. Enter Jeff. Jeff came in. And then Jeff and I started trying to look for a drummer. And there was nobody else ever that's ever been in Single Bullet Theory that I ever wanted to get back in Single Bullet Theory that's ever been on a record. It's like a relationship when you end one with a woman, there's a fucking reason behind it, And, I get flagged as being the problem sometimes. Arguably, it could be true, but it doesn't really matter because it's my band and it is what it is. I make no qualms about the fact I'm not the easiest guy to get along with. Mm-hmm. But if you're going to join my band, I usually sit you down first and say, do some research on what you're about to get into. Yeah, I usually say do some research about what you're getting involved with before you go ahead and do this.
Was it easier to find the current lineup? Was it easier to get everybody, or was it a process?
Ironically, it was really easy. It was so weird because drummers are always a problem with us because we've always had a drummer for one reason or another that's never really in the band but records our record, and he's usually some kind of a fucking beast, like the drummer of King Diamond did our second record and set the bar for everyone to...
Mick Thompson.
Yeah, Matt Thompson to come back and play. He came back, when he did that record, he put drum tracks down that were like, in the studio, we're like, yeah, motherfucker, and then I'm like, who's gonna play this? And then we had this drummer named Darren Patrick do On Broken Wings, and he was a jazz major, and he graduated with Ray Luzier from Korn. From Denton, Texas, and he's fucking sick. And then he quit the band because his mom had heart failure. She went into cardiac arrest in Atlanta. So he went down to Atlanta to take care of her because they gave her like 3 months to live because she had congestive heart failure. And she's still alive now, and it's been 7 years. So he's down there now, and then he set the bar even higher. So finding Nick was a blessing in disguise. But actually, Nick's our live drummer, and what we did is we had a guy named Acacio Carvalho, who's like this drum internet whore. Like, he's all over the internet, and he's really good at doing promo. We put a feeler out to some of our friends that were looking for a drummer to keep it quiet because I'm sick and tired of announcing lineup changes. I always get hammered on that. Oh, yeah, another asshole's quitting Single Bullet Theory because he can't deal with Matt. That's what it turns into. And Acacio replied to an ad. I never met him. We went in the studio and tracked the whole record, never even meeting him. I met him in the studio, but I remember walking in the studio doors, and I said to the producer, I said, is this guy any good? He's like, dude, he's fucking great. Thank God, because I had already sent all the money to the studio, already PayPal'd him money, but he did the record, and then we found Nick, and Nick has been able to cover everyone's stuff. Nick is the best I've ever played with. He's as good as Matt Thompson. So having him in the band is great, but now there's an announcement that we've got to make that Nick is going to be leaving after this tour because he's having a baby. But we're bringing back a former Single Bullet Theory member, a guy named Jay Horvath, who was on the last tour we did with Into Eternity. He was the drummer then. Great guy. We had personality conflicts because he was drunk sometimes, but bottom line is he's coming back. He's already learned the whole set, and he's a monster too. So we're not going to skip a beat, thank God. And Nick may come back down the road after the smoke settles, having a baby and doing it. Maybe we'll be able to get Nick back because I think he's having a good time on tour and stuff, and he's a great guy. But again, another lineup change. It's like, God. And this one has nothing to do with me. So I hope no one else quits. But getting the two guitar players, Joe and Pat, was easy. I was wasted one night. I drank a lot of wine. I drank about 3 bottles of wine. I was on the internet creeping around looking for another guitar player. Because we had a buddy of mine do all the leads. And he's like as good as Malmsteen. And I thought, how the fuck am I going to get... I can't play like that. Like, I'm about as good on a good day as Dave Mustaine. On a good day. And so I said... I got to get a great guitar player. And I was creeping around the internet, and I found this band, Of Wrath and Ruin. And it was Pat and Joe's band. And, like, Pat's like a neoclassical monster. And Joe, they came up together. I was going to just audition Pat. And he came up together, and Joe started playing guitar in my house. I said, dude, why don't you join too? And they're like, what, 3 guitars? I said, fuck yeah. Why not? Let's do something a little different. Why not? There's only a couple bands that have 3 guitars that have long hair like us. It's worked out great. I mean, they're great. This lineup is really the best Single Bullet Theory lineup yet. And I just hope that, when we get Jay back in the fold, the chemistry is still there and he still has the same chops. Because when we got Jay, he had replaced Matt Thompson. Matt Thompson was never really in the band, but Jay had to come in immediately and play all his parts right out of the gate. And Jay was like, this guy's good, but I can do it, no problem. It's going to take some little bit of practice. So hopefully he still has his chops, because that was 2005. We're all getting old.
Yeah.
Arthritis kicks in at 35.
I understand that. So how long was the writing process? And do you write in the studio? Or is everything mapped out? Did you do it by yourself? And
totally solo, yeah. I have a program. I mean, I have Pro Tools like every other asshole in the world now. But I have a program that's really conducive for writing as a guitar player. It's a program Line 6 came out with called Riff Tracker. And then they transferred it to a thing called Riffworks. And it's really great for writing riffs. You can put down like real simple beats. Like you can buy beats, like, just samples. And then it's really easy to track riffs. It's so simple. I mean, a monkey could figure this out like in a second, And so what happens is I just go into massive writing mode for a couple weeks, and I have 170 songs backlogged right now. But I also was writing for the Pissing Ragers album, too, that never came out. So we had, like, 25 songs written for that, all, like, in G tuning and A tuning and all this, like, Pissing Ragers tuning that was so low that I was playing with a baritone. And then I have probably fucking, like, 90 songs in C for Single Bullet Theory. And I don't remember any of them. That's, like, what I do is I'll just start writing out riffs, and I immediately put a sample to it, write the next riff, put a sample to it, and I drag them all into a timeline how I want them to go, and I send them off to the guys to learn. That includes me. I go back months later and have to learn them, And I realize at certain points I've been better than I am now. I go back and go, how the fuck did I play this? But, yeah, that's how the writing process always has gone.
Yeah, okay. Let's see. So what's the plan after this tour? What's the future touring plans down the line?
Well, touring plans, I don't know. We're going to do a lot of regional shows, a lot of East Coast regional shows and stuff. But what we're doing, as soon as we go back, is we're going to start working on the next record. It's going to be a soft title record we signed with Eclipse. And just get these guys in the studio. Nick agreed to do the record. And so he'll be playing drums on that, setting the bar higher for Jay to come back and learn all his parts, because Jay has no interest in doing a record. And I'm gonna utilize all these guys' talents. It's nice to be able to tap into them, because there's a very, very large resource of talent that I have to play with now in this band. And I'm just gonna see what happens. I mean, when I introduce these guys into the fold, their influences start coming out. We have more of like the power metal influence here from Pat and Joe, and Jeff is into a lot of like the death metal stuff. And so it'll be cool to kind of get all these guys and all their creativity on this next record, because Jeff did bring, he had brought a lot of his influences onto 4, because Jeff played on 4. And, me being an ex-bass player, we worked with the bass lines with him and stuff. And, having him play his parts where he... Because what I did is I gave him the songs and said, just write your own parts. I don't want you to play all the guitar parts, but play when you think it needs to be happening. When he starts putting his layers down and stuff, I kind of make like the whole who farted face, Like, what is that? What are you doing, dude? And then we work on things, and I realize a lot of times he's got these neat ideas. So that's kind of, I'll probably let these guys influence every song a little bit, and then that's the plan for now. We'll get the record done and then do some dates. I mean, I own a booking agency that had booked this tour. So, I mean, what I can do now is we have the ability to put Single Bullet Theory out again on something else that makes sense. This made sense because we're friends with Into Eternity. And, you know, we're not going to put a single bullet thread on everything because I'm not going to be an opportunist. But the situation is kind of good. You know, we have a, you know, I have a pretty good position to do something good for the band. Now, hopefully something will happen. Just hard in today's economy to do anything. So that's the plan.
Mm-hmm. Got like two more for you. Now, how different, since you came from, your background was a bass player before, mm-hmm. was it a harder transition to like, oh, go from bass player to guitar? Because nowadays you have all these guitarists becoming bass players.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, was it, and you kind of went reverse, not like it's a step up or a step down, but just how was the transition from bass to guitar for you?
As a musician, yeah. Well, it was something I needed to do as a musician. For a variety of reasons, though, because I always wanted to be in my own band. I had always been in another band that was someone else's band, as just as a bass player. And it's hard to be a bass player and like write all these crazy riffs and have ideas, because when you start writing on bass, it sounds kind of cool. But like knowing you, like if you play a bass riff for somebody, it's like, oh, it's a cool bass line. No one goes, oh, it's a heavy fucking riff. The second you add distortion to it and, you know, palm mute where you need to palm mute and cross pick and write sections, it becomes a riff. It becomes song oriented, you know. So what happened was my old guitar player had left his guitar rig at my house for like 3 months. I was just sitting there. I had a 1994 rectifier and two Mesa cabs and a Ibanez V sitting in my living room, and I thought, I'm going to fire this fucking shit up one day. So I fired it up, you know, and I started dicking around, and I'm like, you know what? This is how I'd like to become a guitar player. And I told him, I said, listen, John, I want to become a guitar player. Let's get a bass player. He's like, oh, fuck that, dude. You'll never be able to do it. You know, you can't play all these parts properly and stuff. And I said, well, then, fuck you. Come get your stuff. I'm going to go buy my own shit and be a guitar player. And that's what I did. And that was it. I mean, I never went back to bass. I mean, I can still play bass. Like, I had a six-string fretless. That was the last thing I played, was a six-string fretless. But, I mean, when I pick up a bass now, it's, like, fucking foreign as hell to me. It's like, how do you play with the strings so far apart, you know? And, you know, and the strings are so loose, you know? But, I mean, you know, I after about 10 minutes of doing it, I get back in the swing of things. But, yeah, I miss bass. Bass is fun. It's easy to be a bass player. You know, it's not difficult to, you know, it's not, unless you're John Moyung or something, it's not very difficult to be a bass player, you know. But, you know, no offense to any bass players out there. I'm sure you're great. But, yeah, I mean, being a guitar player, it's more of a commanding thing. And, you know, it's more of a thing where you can say, yeah, I'm the fucking guitar player and the singer of the band. And you got two cool titles. But if you say, I'm the bass player and the singer of the band, they're like, oh, that's cool.
Unless you're Steve Vai or Geezer Butler, it's like, I wrote the music. It's like, here. Like, okay, no, they won't listen to you.
Right, right. Well, yeah, if you're Steve Harris, it's a different situation, yeah, but I'm not, you know. And, you know, for me to have a guitar, plus I'm a gear junkie, and when I have like 20 amps, like 20 guitar amps, and I have like 30 guitars, and like you can only do so much with bass, like, you know, and once you get an Ampeg SVT, an Ampeg 810, there's nothing else to get. That's the, you know, oh, well, check out this new tone. Bass players don't have like a new and exciting tone. You're never searching for the heavier, better sound. Once you get to Ampeg status, you have the sound. You know, don't fucking do anything different or you're an asshole, you know. When you have a guitar rig, it's like, oh, you know, I got an Engel Powerball. That sounds awesome. But sometimes I like using my Madison Divinity or my crank, you know, and you have a different tone and a different characteristic for, you know, every, I mean, when I pick up a guitar and play through a different amp, a different kind of riffs come out of my mind because I hear things differently, you know. Like if I go through a JCM 900 or old Marshall, I immediately start writing like Stuck Mojo sounding riffs, you know, and prong sounding riffs, you know. But if I play through, you know, a Powerball or something heavy, a Madison Divinity, I'm like, you know, cross picking and palm muting and acting like an asshole. So I mean, it's, you know, I think that as a bass player, it's hard to get a different feel, you know, when you pick up different basses. It's kind of like, well, let me just play this bass line real quick, and then you play it and you go, oh, it sounds the same if I play through that amp, you know. So it's kind of how. That's long, it was a long way to get to an answer, but that's the answer.
Hey, man, passion. You can hear, like, you know, as long as it's from the heart, that's all that really matters to me, you know. It's like, cool. I like honest answers, and it's like, if it takes a little while to get there, as long as it gets there. And
yeah, I could usually condense all my answers. I could paraphrase everything and give you a real short footnotes, but it's not as easy. It's not, to me, I don't think I get my point across quick enough.
I think this comes off very genuine, and I think that people like lose track of genuineness. Mm-hmm. It's like people do so many interviews or whatever, it's like, okay, boom, here's my, I have my answers ready for you, boom, 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 here's my five word answer, and move, I'm done. It's like, oh, right. You know, sometimes a little bit more in-depth answers make show people you're more human, and it's like, all right, people feel
right,
interested in this guy. Well, he's got something to actually say besides, oh, this or that, versus, you know, I mean, I prefer like do interviews like this versus you know, email, because like you can only be so personal or impersonal.
We did a bunch of emails in Europe for the last record, and you know, you get these emails from Greece and from Poland and, you know, from Luxembourg and all these different countries where they've spoken, you know, real bad dialect. They put the English language together very poorly, you know, or they do it in their language and they send it to you on Google Translate, which fucks up everything. You know, you can't make sense. I made Jeff do one. You know, they wanted to interview me. They wanted to talk about Pissing Razors a lot. And I saw the name Pissing Razors a million times in the translation, but I couldn't make any fucking sense out of the questions. It was crazy. It was like, you know, do you balloon yourself when trying out for Panzers? You know, and you're like, what the fuck does that mean? What are you know? Like, what are you talking about? So I sent it to Jeff. I said, you fucking figure this out and you do the interview. And he's like, well, dude, it's a lot about like you and your former band. I go, I cannot do this interview. I mean, there's no way. I don't have time for this. It's just insanity. But you know, you type all the crap out. You always feel like a douche. You know, you go back and delete your sentences. You know, I always feel like, you know, you just run through it quick, say what you got to say. Fuck it. You know, no time like the present. You had a last question?
Yeah, finally, let's see. Wait, let's end it with a Pissing Razors thing.
Oh, great.
I guess people... I guess now that you're one of the other former members of Pissing Razors is doing his thing with... Oh, shit, I forgot.
Overkill?
Oh, fuck it. Oh, we'll just erase this part. I'll do some editing right here. Get this out of the way.
Yeah.
Was that Kill Devil Hill?
Oh, Kill Devil Hill, yeah, Jason. Yeah, he's in Kill Devil Hill.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are there any plans for, like, you said there was, at one point, there was plans for a Pissing Razors, like, reunion or a comeback record, or, and then it just fell.
Yeah, but you know what? It won't include me, and it won't include Jason, and that, or Andre. I mean, Pissing Razors.
Very, very huge lineup of members over the years.
They had a lot of problems at lineup, too, you know, and same exact reason. Not because they're any of them are assholes, just because of different problems. You know, you get aligned, the planets don't align a lot of times, and you align yourself with people that are not right for your group, you know. But I mean, I would love to do another Pissing Razors record. I mean, I'd like to buy the name from Eddie if he'd let me buy, because I mean, I feel that, you know, this, I'll go into my personal end of the thing now. When I was hired by them to do the Evolution record, which is the last record they ever did, and they flew me down, my expectations were, I thought, to help them write the next record, because they wanted to put out a really, really heavy record and kind of change their sound again, because they kind of evolved, you know. When they had Jason sing for them, they had a very Pantera-esque sound. Prior to that, they sounded like a heavy Sepultura, you know. So I thought, well, okay, they have a new singer, Andre, who's a great friend of mine still. I love Andre. He's one of my favorite people. And he had a lot of diversity in his voice. He could scream. He could sing. You know, he was a great writer. He was scary looking. He had the whole package. And I thought, well, cool. I'm going to go down there and fucking inject some fucking piss and vinegar into this next album. When I went down there, Eddie already had the record written. And it sounded like the last fucking record. And I said, well, dude, I mean, come on, really? I mean, this, what am I here for? You know, you could play these guitar parts, because Eddie can play guitar. So, long story short, yeah, I didn't really have a lot to do with the Evolution record, but when the press came out with that and Spitfire released the album, I got blamed. I got blamed primarily for that record not being what a lot of the fans wanted to have. You know, they thought my injection into the band was the reason that record didn't do well or didn't sound like the Pissing Razors they expected it to be. And it really had nothing to do with me. And Andre, it had nothing to do with him either. I mean, we were literally force-fed, or spoon-fed, I guess you'd say, what we were supposed to do in the studio. We were hired guns. And I've talked to Eddie several times about letting me write a record. You know, just play fucking drums on it, because he's a monster drummer. That's your style. He's got his own style. I mean, you're wearing a Lamb of God shirt. Chris told me point blank when we first met them that we were a huge influence on them. And if you listen to Lamb of God's drum playing, you can hear Eddie Garcia all over that. You know, and Eddie was like, oh, I'm blown away by hearing that. Because, you know, at the time, you know, Lamb of God was on tour with Chimera and 18 Visions and Atreyu. It was a long time ago. And we had played in Chicago the same night. And we knocked on the bus door. I said, hey, we're Pissing Razors. And they're like, holy fuck, dude. You know, and I'm like, what do you mean, holy fuck? Really? We're saying holy fuck to you, you know? But if they would let me write the next record and just do another record and get either Andre to sing or their previous singer, Joe, I can guarantee you the fans would shit their fucking pants. Because I have 25 songs written that are absolutely fucking brutal sitting that I never gave to Eddie. I wanted to, like, I'm like, yeah, let's just, you know, down-tune guitars, playing baritones, you know, all that heavy groove, that, you know, like, it sounded like Skin Lab meets fucking Pantera, which is what the fans of Pissing Razors want, you know. They didn't want Evolution. Evolution sounded like watered-down fucking, just sounded like it was a, that record sucked. I hate that record. I really do. I can't listen. I listen, and I go, this fucking record blows. You know, I like that I was part of Pissing Razors, but not during that era, you know. And even Jason, I mean, Where We Come From was a great record, but I don't think Jason really looks at things and goes, oh, it was great being in Pissing Razors. I don't think he was happy about that, because he's more of like an Alice in Chains kind of singer. I mean, he's, you know, he sings his ass off in that Kill Devil Hill band, you know. And at Pissing Razors, he was, like, force-fed into sounding like Phil Anselmo, you know, like, literally just like Phil Anselmo, you know. So, I mean, yeah, I you know, I wish all those guys good luck, you know, but I would love to get Rick and Eddie and me and Andre, or me and Joe, to write a record, because the two former guitar players have their own band now called Years of Cold, which is a great record, a great band. But, you know, they're not going to do another Piston Graves album, I don't think. And plus, Eddie now is a sound man for Overkill, and he was busy. He was in ministry for a little while, you know, and who knows, you know, who knows what will happen to it. Time will tell. Maybe they'll hear this interview and fucking wake the fuck up, you know, because I would love to do something, but whatever. We'll see.
All right. Well, thank you for your time, Mr. Matt. Right, it was a pleasure.
Yeah, it was a pleasure. Thanks for the interview.
Thank you for your time. Oh, fuck it. One more.
Oh. God damn.
Word. I'll add this somewhere in the middle.
The song with all the fucking solos. Oh, yeah, we want to talk about that?
Yeah.
Okay.
What the hell? I forget. Auctioneer
of Souls. Auctioneer of Souls.
All right, I'm sure we're still recording.
I love talking about that. That's...
All right. So, one track you have on your new record for Auctioneer of Souls. How long and how intensive was getting, what was it, like 15 different people doing guest solos on one song?
Yeah, that's
for
sucked.
Like a couple of seconds.
Yeah, that sucked. Well, they all have about 22 seconds, 22 to 26 seconds. We gave Jeff Loomis, I think, 56 seconds because he's Jeff Loomis. But, yeah, it was a nightmare. And it was kind of an ambitious idea. When I came up with the idea, I didn't know if it was really going to be tangible. You know, but, I mean, it was something where I'm a fan of a lot of the older metal stuff, and I like a lot of, like, flamboyant guitar work and stuff. And one of my favorite instrumental songs ever was Mr. Scary by Dokken. And I said to my guitar player at the time, John, who produced the album, I said, dude, wouldn't it be cool to do a song that was like Mr. Scary meets Hangar 18? And he said... in his really deep Johnny Cash voice, that'd be fucking great, dude. And I said, well, I'm going to work on that. And then I said, but then you and I got to do like a million solos. So I said, how about we just start, I just start reaching out to my pool of friends that I have. And I called Tim Roth, and I called Rob Doherty from Into Eternity, who's no longer with us. And I called Mark Simpson from Flotsam and Jetsam, and I called Jeff Loomis, and I had all my friends, John Perez from Solitude Eternus, Jack Frost from Sabotage and Seven Witches, and, Pete Black from King Diamond. I didn't know Pete. I reached out to Andy LaRocque originally because I toured him, and Andy said he couldn't do it because of his schedule. And I thought, well, fuck, I still want somebody from the classic King Diamond lineup. So I got Pete Black. I had to find him online and got him on it. And getting everybody to do their sections was a nightmare, you know, because we had to chop and cut the song and figure out exactly. The song started off being like 4 minutes long. Now it's like 11, you know. And then Jeff Loomis wanted me to create a whole new part for him so his solo could change keys in the middle. So I had to, like, fucking go back and replay different guitar parts. But it came out really cool, man. And it's so cool to, like, listen back and go, you know, we have all these guys that, like, are heroes to me as a guitar player that all gel in the song. I mean, the song is probably kind of overzealous. And, you know, if you're not a guitar player, you probably think it's boring as fuck. But as a guitar player, as a musician, musicians love it because it's just blazing. It's just so many guys just blazing the fretboard. And Tim Roth did these two. We gave Tim two solos because I loved Tim so much. I wanted him to do two spots.
Yeah, at the beginning, at the end. It's...
Yeah, he's about like a minute and a half in, and then he's about like 6 minutes in. And he just lights it up. He's so good. And it was great having him on there. And it's of course, now it's great that we got Rob on it. And it's fantastic because... you know, he's no longer with us, but I mean, his solo was fucking priceless, and it's nice to have him on it. You know, it was a fun time. My buddy Carlos Alvarez from a band called Shadow Dance is on it, and he's a fantastic guitar player. And of course, James Murphy, you know, who produced two of our records, and he actually did a little video spot of him playing his lead, which came out cool. You know, and he's awesome. But I mean, you know, I think it was something that needed to happen for me. You know, it's out of my system. It took me probably 4 months to get the whole thing together. You know, when everything was said and done. And I'm happy with it, you know. There's one little vocal line in the whole song, and but it just, you know, we'll never do it live, obviously. Even though Pat probably could figure out most of those fucking solos and play them, I would never put him through that murderous task because he would probably want to throw himself out of a building. But it was fun, and like I said, it never happened before. I wish our label at the time had have seen not the genius in it, but has seen the potential in it, because they should have taken it and marketed the shit out of that to all the Guitar World magazine people and all the Premier Guitar, you know, all the, you know, they should have marketed it towards guitar players, that song at least, that single, because that would have been a, getting a reviews in Guitar World magazine about that would have been a home run for that record. But they dropped the ball, you know, didn't do anything with it. So, I mean, ultimately speaking, it'll be a piece of nostalgia, you know, it'll never go away, but it won't be something that ever, you know, that's ever like, you know, in the limelight unless somehow I get the rights to my record back and I do that, you know. But we'll see, you know, time will tell. I forget anybody that was on there. Riggs from Scum of the Earth. But he did like a little weird, like, Riggs-ish solo. But yeah, it was cool. It's a good time. A lot of fun.
Awesome.
Twenty-five minutes.
I can't wait till the Pistons Razors interview gets put out there, and people are like, "Oh, he thinks that record fucking."